we really have a branding message problem in our culture. You know, there's very little do it for the joy, do it because it feels good kind of messaging. And that's left us women in particular feeling selfish and indulgent, or like they're doing something wrong unless they're self-punishing. And certainly if they're self-accepting, there's this messaging that that's not the place to be. You need to be striving harder, pushing harder, more miserable. That is really the key piece, is homing in on the joy, the desire, and beyond that, the self-respect, and allowing those things to be the catalyst for your commitment to eating well, or your commitment to nourishing yourself, your commitment to whatever kind of exercise or movement you enjoy.
You're listening to the Mother of Reinvention Show, a weekly podcast about midlife motherhood, careers, health, relationships, and more. I'm Megan Francis, a 40-something mom of 5 kids ages teen to young adult. Listen each Thursday as I bring you an interview with an inspiring mother of reinvention, plus some of my thoughts about wellness, self-care, relationships and divorce, big kid parenting, and more. It's all at motherofreinventionshow.com. Keep listening for another episode of the Mother of Reinvention Show. It's what's next for midlife moms. I don't know about you, but I follow a lot of midlife podcasters and Instagrammers. Now that I'm in my mid-40s, I'm in a place where I'm learning a lot about myself again. It kind of reminds me of when I was pregnant with my first baby and I was reading everything I could get my hands on about pregnancy and birth and breastfeeding. And now in midlife, there's just so much to learn and absorb again. From hormone health to fitness to just how to spend this next chunk of my life, I love the inspiration and learning that's happening on those platforms. But it can get a little overwhelming too, and I think a lot of that's because, as with pregnancy and early motherhood, there seems to be this sense that we can optimize absolutely everything. Sometimes I find myself wondering where to draw the line between, say, eating healthy, which I'm very interested in, and trying to hack my biology, which seems like it could get really expensive and time-consuming and possibly create some unhealthy obsessions. There's also sort of this thread running through a lot of these conversations that we should all be working harder, learning more, doing more. Again, kind of like the messages we all got about pregnancy and new motherhood. It got me asking myself the question, are we allowed to enjoy this journey? And what might our relationships with our own health and our own bodies look like if we were able to truly accept ourselves while also making positive changes? Today, I'm really excited to bring back Rachel Hughes, who I interviewed on the show last year. Rachel's a nutrition coach and a midlife wellness expert at The Menno Memos, and also is a host on the Peri app, a community for perimenopausal women. I love Rachel because she comes at making these positive life changes from a place of self-love and self-acceptance. In this conversation, Rachel and I dive deep into some of the more touchy-feely aspects of health and explore the questions, can changing the way we eat be fun? Can physical activity feel good? And how can discipline coexist with joy and contentment? We'll get to that conversation in just a minute, but first I want to remind you about a special page I've set up on my website where I share some of my favorite things. It's at morefaves.com. That's morefaves.com. I've got some products and other things I'm loving right now, like a roundup of my favorite black teas and some countertop appliances I use every single day. Again, you're going to find all of that at morefaves.com, morefaves.com. Okay, now let's jump into my conversation with nutrition coach and wellness expert, Rachel Hughes. Hey, Rachel, thank you so much for being back on the show.
Megan, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. I'm so happy to be with you again.
It's really fun. Sorry. Well, I love watching your Instagram content because I feel like you're coming from a place where I'm getting to. I think you're a little further down the road than me in this like midlife, you know, experience.
Midlife mayhem. Yes.
And I think what I'm starting to really want to have is some honest conversations around the touchy-feely side of physical health, which sounds like two different things, right? We think of our mental health, emotional health, and physical health as all being very separate. So I just want to start this conversation first by saying, let's just talk about how hard we are on ourselves. And how like we in midlife, I feel like suddenly some time opens up, maybe some money opens up. We feel like we can run after this life we didn't get to have for a while or whatever. We can really pay attention to our health, but that can be great, and it can have sort of a downside. So what has your experience been personally, but also just in the community that you've created around you, of watching women put so much pressure on themselves to be this perfect, like, hot midlife lady, just grabbing life by the nuts, you know?
Yeah. No, I love this question, Megan, because I think that women in our culture struggle over a lifetime with this sort of finding the perfect, whatever that is, space for themselves and making it appear that way. And certainly social media, for all of the good that it's brought, I think especially to midlife women and making connections with people, there's still, it's all coveting, you know, it's all looking and watching and sort of determining where we are in that thing. But the flip side is that I think in midlife, you know, along with all the things you mentioned that might be available to us at this season, during this season, there's also this, I think, a real genuine ability to tap into, I'm just not going to go there, much more easily than it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. At least that's what I'm experiencing. And that's what I think many people sort of in my, you know, people who follow me or people that I am following are experiencing. And, you know, I wrestle with this though a fair amount, or I shouldn't say I wrestle, I'm conscious of it as well, that personally sort of, am I comparing, am I competing, or am I revering and finding of interest and being inspired by? And that's sort of something that it's like my touchstone in this whole world on Instagram, that I come back to, and it's very helpful. But I think sort of your broader question about, you know, how hard we are on ourselves and my experience with that. So I think I always struggled throughout my younger years with certain things. And in some ways, those things are louder now, but only if they are things that I haven't really personally done work on. And so, you know, that whole, I think it's like a therapy thing, or, you know, you're kind of like, you're an onion and you're layered. And the same things will come back around. But if you've done the work, you're a layer deeper. And so you can sort of handle more and observe yourself more and kind of care for yourself more. And my thing is that I hope to always encourage others to put down the things of the past, because I'm projecting and I'm guilty of having trouble doing this. But at the same time, at this season in life, I'm much more compassionate now towards others and myself, which, you know, is the piece that helps it all feel not so scary. So yeah. I had a lot of fears as a younger person and a real keen instinct, but I was very lacking in confidence. And so my instincts were repeatedly denied by myself. I sought out the advice of others all the time. I felt sure someone else knew better than I did. And for me, that's a straight line from trauma to, you know, life consequence, in my opinion. But now I trust my instincts much more, and it's very freeing. And so although I still may be sometimes faced with behaviors that I learned as a younger person, or even consequences for my old behaviors, I'm much quicker to tap into this sort of exercise in self-forgiveness. And that's really where I'm always coming from, and where I always try to encourage others to be. Because, you know, I mean, life can be great, but it also can be hard. And what we see is not always true. It probably isn't, you know, in a moment that someone is filming videos and like looking happy and strolling by a pool or whatever, you know, there's real life going on in the background, and we aren't privy to that. And it would be sort of defeatist, maybe, in you know, to always be sort of talking about the negative that's going on while we're trying to, you know, visually portray something otherwise. But I think, you know, it's helpful to just kind of be aware, be reminded of that periodically. I see posts of others that remind me, and it's helpful.
Well, it's true, but it's only a part of the story. Like what you're seeing often, I'm not going to say always, because I'm sure there are lives that are completely manufactured, but most of the time it's just the part that someone's deciding is, you know, camera ready. And we all do that because, I mean,
exactly.
We all do it, right? With this,
we all do it. Of course we do. That's the name of the game. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's like, it's not so much feeling like putting something out there about yourself that's happy, bright and shiny, has a nice filter on it, whatever is dishonest, or that what you're seeing is dishonest. It's more just like, oh, this is like a little part. This is the part we're just consuming for almost entertainment purposes or aspiration or inspiration. But like, there's way more to it. And we all have that.
Yes.
I want to back up really quick because there was something that you mentioned about like the I'm not going to go there moment. And I feel like I'm a, you know, experienced mom. My oldest is 24. And there was definitely a time when I was a real young mom that I was kind of, I don't know, blown around by opinions. Like it was like, like I was a boat. And I was just on the waves of opinions, and people have such strong opinions about things. I'd be like, well, so-and-so says that this is the best way to diaper. And like, you know, oh, okay, I guess I believe that. But wait, no, so-and-so says this. And finally, like 10 years in, I was like, oh, I actually have to just come up with my own thing. And once I did that, it was easy to let the other voices kind of fall away. I think where if you're kind of just getting into this health and nutrition in the midlife space thing, you're maybe back on like that boat on the waves again going, oh, well, they're talking about HRT. Like it's, you know, like it's God's gift and everyone needs to use it. And someone else is more circumspect and someone else thinks we shouldn't use it at all. And you don't know where you're at. Like you're still just being kind of tossed around. How do you get to the place where you can say, this is where I am, and it's okay if other people are in a different place?
Yeah, another such a great question. And also something I think about all the time, because I'm very sensitive and interested in the voices of others. And I know from my own experience, as you just shared with yours about yours, that it took me a long time to feel like I was actually on solid footing with regards to my own opinions and my own thoughts and my own ways of doing things. And so I'm very aware, and I try and post sensitively to the fact that, you know, you may be on one side of the fence or the other. You may not know where you are, but home in on what works for you and sort of dull out the chatter around you. It is an exercise. It's an exercise in patience. I think it helps to be, you know, I share things like about journaling and meditating and sort of having a toolbox of options that can help you learn yourself. And whether you're learning something about yourself for the first time or you're sort of coming back around to something that you knew that you had set aside, it's all valuable. It's all important information, and getting there and giving yourself the time and the space to sort of come to a conclusion is critical. And it, again, like even getting there, how you get there varies. Like some, for some people, you know, therapy is the answer, right? They need to sort of really spend time and effort getting out of themselves and understanding themselves. For other people, it is journaling, or it's making lists, or it's sort of committing to trying things. I think that's also really important. We talk about trying things sort of like in this very expansive way, like, you know, try a new career, try a new sport, try. But there's also, you know, trying these little intimate things that can help inform you about yourself. And that could be, you know, adding plants to breakfast. That could be journaling for 10 minutes. It could be trying meditation for 15 minutes. It could be speaking to, you know, someone, a close friend or someone in your community who really resonates for you and helps you bounce ideas off of yourself. It's really an exercise, I think, in learning to trust yourself And that how you get to that point really may vary for you. But I think it's critical because, you know, as you brought up in your first question, we are still so vulnerable in many ways to kind of scattering our own brains. Mm. And probably, you know, I really believe this strongly that probably you already know the answer. It's just giving yourself the time and space to access it. That could be a walk out in nature. I think through so much just taking a walk. It's like the best, you know, 30 minutes or 40 minutes, whatever it is truly a gift to myself to get outside, walk, have nowhere to go, just take my time. That's something that works for me.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoyed journaling for a long time. That was really informative to me, but now not as much. Meditation, that's something I practice, you know, consistently, but not for a terribly long period of time, mm-hmm. but it helps me. So again, you know, think about what gives you joy. I think that's really an important thing. And I'm sure we'll talk about that more, but it has to be something that gives you some peace and some joy. And that's where you begin to sort of unravel the noise from the noise and really hear yourself. So if that
yeah,
makes sense.
It does. And let's just like pull this woo-woo thread because, okay. I'm just starting to feel like there's a lot of dogma around nutrition, movement, and it is a scientific thing. There are some science, like there's some data out there. There's research. There's things that we know, but there's a lot that we don't know. And it's very easy to get really caught up in what people believe they know to be true or really truly believe for themselves. And I think there's like another component in this, that individual component that cannot really be, it's not a data point, you know, it's something that's intuitive and can only be felt. And like you, so certain maybe diets could have different diets could work for different people, but won't work for all people. Why is that? Is it science or is it woo woo? You know, it's like when you start pulling that thread, you start to get to like how important that individual knowing yourself is that you're talking about right now. And so it's like, yeah, like you said, you know, this isn't even a question. It's more just like me going, you know, the answer, but the answer is your answer. It's not necessarily everybody's answer.
Yes. I love that. That's absolutely true. I stand by that. And I really, really hope to encourage others to get to that place. You're right. Any diet for anyone will work for some period of time, but any diet for everyone will not work all the time. It just doesn't happen. And there could be, you know, 10 different reasons why that is so. And the reasons could be physiological. They could be biological. They could be externally related, life stressors, financial issues. There are so many reasons to look at, and all of them are valid. And at the end of the day, I think sort of figuring out how important it is for you to nurture yourself, what that looks like for you. You know, I don't even remember what diet it was, one of the, you know, many, many, many I've been on, but they were talking a lot about like sort of recognizing is the attachment to food really about the attachment to being social, for example, you know, like, is that really your thing? Is it really about sitting down with family and just talking and sharing and blah, blah, blah. And so is that where, if that is important to you, then you need to sort of structure what you were going to eat and how you're going to eat around those times. But, you know, that like at some point that it's informative and it was informative to me, but it wasn't enough. And I really needed to sort of gain the education that I could as best as I could. apply it to myself because that's, it was something I enjoy doing. It wasn't always like a quest to lose the last 10 pounds. It was also, I was interested in what I was interested in and I wanted to try things out. But at some point I think, you know, what works for me isn't necessarily what works for another. And I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday. I can tell you what to do and what to eat to lose those last 10 pounds, let's say, but I cannot tell you how best to maintain that loss because that's up to you. Like that is really sort of diving into what you enjoy eating. Do you even like cooking? Do you want to measure food? Do you not want to measure food? Do you exercise a lot? Do you not exercise at all? Do you have little kids? Do you have older kids? Are you taking care of people? Are you stressed? Are you financially strapped? Are you not sleeping? I mean, there is so much to get into.
And do you even care? Do you even really want it at the end of the day?
Do you even care? Yeah. Yes, exactly. And I think that that's also kind of a weird place too that midlife women are in that I see that, you know, there's this kind of like, I don't care and screw it. And I've been following the rules, you know, my whole life. And I just want to eat what I want to eat. And I don't really give a crap. And that's fine. There's a lot of that, that if that works, that works. That's not the lane that I'm in.
Right.
But there's no judgment about it. There's no, if that's where you are, that's where you are. You may not always be there. You weren't always there. That's where you are today. And I, you know, that deserves respect. So, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot to unpack there and it becomes almost like a spiritual thing at some point, because it's not just about it. We're not all trying to biohack ourselves. Right. And
right.
We're not all trying to have like the most extended lifetime we can ever have.
Yeah.
And we're all making individual decisions every day based on what's important to us and what our intuition is telling us. And there's just so much going on. Like there's so many little pieces of information coming at us and through us that it's hard to pay attention to them all without getting really overwhelmed.
You know, I think it's important too, and this, we hear this a lot, but it really is helpful to sort of think about, and this terminology is popular in diet culture, but to think about your why. You know, why are you even interested in worrying about what you're eating? You know, are you influenced by the people around you who just actually, you know, are very interested in it? And so you sort of feel this pull to be, maybe you're not. If your why is something around your health, that's specific. Mm-hmm. If it's around losing some weight, that's specific. But again, it requires going deeper. You know, if you want to lose your weight, why do you want to lose weight? What if you don't lose weight? What, you know, are you going to feel like a failure or are you going to be like content? And so it's this constant self-check-in. And also, you know, unfortunately, diet culture is just so loud. It just is. It, you know, we live in a world where a lot is being told to us, a lot is being sold to us. And we certainly have this idea that somehow something will be quote unquote better on the other side of something. But my hope, excuse me, is to really encourage people to think about the fact that it's not the finite point, right? It's not the getting to a certain size or tackling your sugar obsession or whatever. It's all the stuff in the middle that actually is the most significant and meaningful. And being okay with that in between is actually all the work.
Yeah. That's like your whole, that's life. That is all of life.
That's life.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. That is all of life. Wow. Yeah.
Well, I want to take a quick break, but when we get back, I really want to talk about this sort of dichotomy, this conflict between the idea that like, I want to do better, but I'm still okay where I am. I think that can kind of blow our minds at times and or all of the time, right?
Yeah.
Let's dig into that in a minute. Hi, friends. I want to take a moment to talk about the sponsor for today's episode, Vionic. Vionic is a footwear brand that I wear pretty much every day. They make really cute shoes in every style you can think of, from heels to sneakers, and all with amazing comfort. All Vionics feature VioMotion technology, Vionic's patented podiatrist-developed footbed that delivers three-zone comfort with a deep heel cup for stability, ball of foot cushioning, and ultimate arch support. I have been loving their Clarita wedges lately. They're sort of a retro-inspired stacked heel wedge and honestly the most comfortable wedges I've ever worn. I wore them to Will's graduation and was climbing up and down bleachers, running across the football field to flag him down for a photo, and then that long trek back to the car, and I was comfy and light on my feet the whole time. As you know, I like to stay active, but I also like to look pulled together, and with Vionic, you don't have to choose. And Vionic offers a 30-day wear test, so you can return your Vionics for a full refund within 30 days if you're not satisfied for any reason, even if you've worn them outside. I'm going to get you free shipping so you can try out a pair of Vionics. Go to VionicShoes.com and use promo code MOR. Again, that's V-I-O-N-I-C shoes.com and use the code M-O-R more for free shipping. Okay, back to the interview. Okay, Rachel. So this is something that I have been thinking a lot about lately. And it kind of came from a place where I've, just by listening to that voice, like you said, like you already know the answer, I started to notice that if I looked at the way I eat or the way I move my body as like a punishment for not having done it right in the past, which is very common, I feel like a punishment or like a trying to redeem yourself or something you have to do, I'm never happy either with the process or the results. Like I'm having no fun getting there and then I'm not happy with where I get. But every time I've come to something just with some curiosity or doing things that feel good or just kind of saying, you know, I just love myself enough to do this, which I know is like really easier said than done. It changes everything. So that's like a really hard place to be all the time. And I would just love to hear your thoughts about that conflict.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I guess for starters, I think I'm thinking that we really have a branding message problem in our culture. You know, there's very little do it for the joy, do it because it feels good kind of messaging. And that's left us women in particular feeling selfish and indulgent or like they're doing something wrong unless they're self-punishing. And certainly if they're self-accepting, there's this messaging that that's not the place to be. You need to be striving harder, pushing harder, more miserable. And yeah, you know, back to this sort of joy component there, that is really the key piece, is homing in on the joy, the desire, and beyond that, the self-respect and allowing those things to be the catalyst for your commitment to eating well or your commitment to nourishing yourself, your commitment to whatever kind of exercise or movement you enjoy. And like so many things in life, you start to give attention to a new approach and then there's a good deal of jumping on and off the wagon. But in remaining aware of your behaviors, I think, and your goals and tapping into that piece again, that commitment, self-respect, joy, tapping into that is actually better than sort of tapping into the aesthetic component. I think you really start to invest in yourself differently and realize your triggers, implement the tools you've been trying to utilize. And eventually I think something clicks and you're sort of over a hurdle. I think whether you're content in your body or not, or you're content in your kitchen or not, there is this piece about discipline that's so important. And many of us buck up against this, you know, even or especially in midlife, because we, again, I'm repeating myself, but we feel like, you know, we should be kind of done.
We've been on other people's schedules for so long.
And we're done with rules and everything, you know, that saying discipline feels like a rule.
Do you think there's also a little part of us that thinks maybe we've missed the boat? Because I wonder that sometimes too. Like it's easier in some ways to like just say, I'm not going to do this because I don't have to because I'm, you know, I'm midlife lady. But part of us maybe thinks like it's just too late.
No, I think that's such a good point. I think that's true. And I've had moments of feeling like that. But then I kind of realized, like, what is that? I have perimenopausal symptoms, but I'm 52 years old. Like I what am I talking about? You know, I want to, again, sort of getting back to this idea of your why. I really, two things really struck me personally about my why for anything. One of them was the death of my father, who died a few years ago, who I was not close with at all. And he was a very unhealthy person. He was diabetic, type 2 diabetic. He drove himself into it, and high blood pressure. These are two things he could manage all by himself. Mm-hmm. And he didn't, and he became ill, and it was pretty quick. Like, he got a cut on his leg, he was in the hospital, and within a week he had died. Wow. It had like a trifecta of organ failure. Mm. And that really scared me, because there's a genetic component to some of what he had that I was teed up for, right? And I was very afraid of prediabetes and very afraid of what that looked like. And the other why is I have a son who's 27, who's, you know, living with his girlfriend, and they're starting a life together, and they may have children one day. And I really want to be present for that in all ways. And those things help me make a commitment to the things that I'm already invested in anyway. And that matters a lot to me. I have every right at any time, any day, to say, screw it. I'm just going to, you know, I don't really care about any of this, and I want to do what I want to do. And, you know, something, I do that. And I do enjoy those moments, and I do enjoy those days. Like, I'm so not into being dogmatic and super rigid about everything, but I also have worked really hard to get to that place of self-respect and self-regard. And to me, that requires personal investment in taking good care of myself as best as I can.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that kind of answers anything. Or
it does. And I think that it just leads me again to it. It can, if we try to make it, if we're looking for like a black and white yes or no kind of answer, I think we're never going to get there, because there are things that are just, they seem too opposite when they're presented to you. Like, if you, I'm just like holding my hands out in front of me and imagining like a platter on each hand. And one has like, love your body. And then the other one has like love your body as it is now. Be okay with who you are. Content. Okay. That's one platter in front of me. And the other one is like, be motivated to, you know, to like be the best you can be. We can't, like, one of those can't really win. They both have to win. Like, we have to be nibbling off both.
That's why, I mean, I think we're really saying the same thing. And that's why that piece in the middle, really, which is the journey, which is the life journey, is really the place to sort of be focused and content with. You know, you can, again, like, I keep bringing up this poundage thing, but you can have this goal about losing X amount of weight, but once you get there, then what?
Right.
You know, have you formed habits? Like, do you care anymore? Did you just want to fit into whatever you wanted to fit into in one day? And as opposed to sort of shifting your thinking enough where you sort of go, I have like maybe 30, 35 years ahead of me. Yeah. And I want to enjoy as much as I can. And that means eating the cake when I darn well want to, and also eating a lot of plants, which I maybe haven't been so great about, you know?
Yeah.
And is it perfect? No. Does it guarantee a perfectly healthy, you know, disease-free, chronic problem-free life? I don't know. But I think it helps more than we think it does. And I think it's just so important to give ourselves a lot of room for that place in the middle, that journey in the middle. You know, it's not black and white. Nothing's black and white.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Well, and one of the hardest things to learn about life, which I'm 4.5 decades in and still learning it, and my yoga practice is helping me a lot, but that life is a practice. Like, It's there's no getting there. You get to one place and you got somewhere else to go. So you just show up and do the work, regardless of where it takes you, because doing the work is where the magic happens, whatever that is.
And I think too, just to get back to Megan, this thing about discipline, I think that's also where it's important to sort of not shrug off what discipline can be. Because it really, I think, helps keep us tethered to something that is helpful to us. You know, it's not meant to be a horrible tool. It's meant to kind of help us make best decisions. You can be disciplined about anything. You know, you can be disciplined about, I don't know. I mean, we're disciplined, hopefully, about our hygiene. You know, it's just, but at the end of the day, those are just habits that we've learned and we've formed and we're committed to. And I think my perspective is looking at your health and your wellness and appreciating it's not just about your body. It's so much about your mind. Like that is really, that is the key piece. But there's a tension, but there's also a really real necessity for discipline. Let yourself create a new habit. You've done it. You've done it more times than you can count when you really think about it.
Yeah.
And if sort of getting to a place that feels like someplace you want to be in terms of what you're eating and how you're moving is important to you, choose something and let it become a habit. But the worst thing to do is all or nothing.
Right. Well, and it can be fun. It can be pleasurable. And I think that's something too, that is really hard for us because we've internalized no pain, no gain, or like, you know, even the little jokey jokes about how only things that taste terrible are good for you. And we know that's not true, but our bodies and, you know, our biology wants us to stay where we're at. And it's like, it doesn't want us to do anything that's different, but sometimes the different thing can feel really good and be really fun. Mm-hmm. And we'll still resist. Our minds and bodies will still resist it. So let's talk about that. Like how movement can, maybe even should, I don't like the word should, but I'm going to use it anyway, feel good. Eating well can taste good. So it can be pleasurable and still help us out. And it can still be disciplined, by the way. It's still hard to create a habit of doing something even when it feels good, which kind of blows my mind sometimes. So let's talk about that. Like, how do we unlearn the messages we've internalized about basically punishing ourselves, I guess, to have the, you know, privilege of living longer and miserable?
Right.
That's not how it has to be. But how do we unlearn that?
Yeah. So I think it's literally taking the first step. And understanding it's a process, meaning it requires time. And in many ways, I think it's about getting it out of our heads and letting our bodies do and experience the work. So just that, right? Taking the first step literally may be taking a 20-minute walk, you know, and sort of giving yourself you know, having an approach that feels appropriate for you. So if it's, I'm going to take a 20-minute walk every day for this, you know, this next month, then good for you. But if that is truly not appropriate because you have stuff to do and get to, don't set yourself up. You are absolutely setting yourself for failure. Take 20 minutes twice a week. There's nothing wrong with that. It is 40 minutes more than you did the week before, right? And that is going to be positive. It won't not be unless you injure yourself. And I can tell you that if you remained disciplined about it, and again, here I'm using discipline like, okay, I'm going to try this, but let me really think about what's reasonable for me and try it like that. I'm not going to set myself up for failure. And I'm just going to see how I do over the next 5 days. With time and effort, your gears will shift about it. I was a dancer and I internalized everything bad you could about my body. You know, it was like an unending effort to be better, to be thinner, to be more graceful, be more flexible. And I quit and I spent years unraveling from all of that messaging. And it was an effort. It was a commitment to myself. You brought up yoga, which I so appreciate. I found that yoga was a place to step back into movement after many, many years. So I quit dancing at 19. I went to college. I had my son like right out of college. And then I was working. I was working and I was raising my son. I was getting divorced. I was getting remarried. It took a long time to get back into something that felt, quite frankly, safe physically, because I was so petrified that I would start doing something physical, start working out, start whatever, and become obsessive about it and sort of get back into this dancer mentality that was just so wonky. But yoga was a place where I could go. I could go when I wanted. It felt, because it didn't feel like I wasn't training to be a yoga teacher,
right,
you know, so I could go when I wanted. I could take the length of class that I wanted. And within the class itself, there's all these moments of, I guess, grace, really, right? Like, don't stretch to the point that you're creating injury. Yeah. Like, stay where you are, take a pause, breathe. That stepping into yoga, and it was yoga for me, it may be bike riding or whatever for somebody else, gave me so much joy. It gave me so much confidence also, because what it did was it pulled me out of my thinking brain around what's physical and what it should be and what I should be aiming for. And it just landed me right smack in my body. And it was just a wonderful physical expression and truly a mental expression of self-respect, self-regard, joy, quiet, pleasure, calm. It was all of that. So I love that you brought up yoga. I think, you know, for anyone out there who it might resonate with, go to a yoga class. But, you know, again, plugging into this idea that I am making different choices rather than I am on a diet or I am going to start a workout plan. I'm going to make a different choice here. And I think that can be helpful, because I think when we allow ourselves to see that there's no finite point, right? Rather, we're navigating our way through a better choice for breakfast or maybe a different choice of movement today or whatever. We're truly acknowledging where we are and establishing a new history, you know, and whatever that looks like. Again, like if it's biking, if it's walking, if it's yoga. And the thing is, the more time we have, the more time we let ourselves do this. And I'm not talking like an extensive amount of time. I'm talking like 3 weeks, right? You know, yeah. 6 weeks. Like, it really, the longer we sort of let that kind of just build on itself, I am telling you, you begin to make different choices that serve your better mind, better health, better physical health. And you kind of start to want different things. Mm. You know, you just do. It's like if you go from eating, you know, refined sugar all the time, and then you really start introducing more plants, you really may not like it at first. Yeah. You know, you have to kind of give yourself time, let it go day after day after day. And then there's like, there comes a day where you're like, gosh, you know, I could really actually go for some steamed vegetables and blah, blah, blah. You know, whatever. Like it happens. It happens.
Well, your brain literally gets rewired, and we don't really have time to get into all the neuroscience of it, but you do. Yeah. And isn't it interesting when you're talking, I'm thinking like how much we cling to this day in front of us being just like every other day we've had, and realizing it's so short, like 21 days. Mm-hmm. It's not that much. And all you have to do is get to the end of the day 21 times in a row, because at some point you're sleeping and you get to start with a fresh slate. And that's so hard because we get so conditioned in our routines and in our habits. And like, we cling to that really hard, I guess, and want
to
get
cling to it really hard. But that's where I would suggest too, because 3 weeks can feel like, you know, 10 days in and you're like, what the hell, this sucks, you know, but that's why I do suggest journaling or meditation, even, you know, like a 3-minute meditation, because these are struggles and you are rewiring your brain and you are, you know, trying sometimes so hard to like give yourself a break and at the same time do something different. And it can feel like more work than it should, but that's why it's just important to kind of give yourself. And I find writing things down to be a good tool for myself and a good tool for women I've worked with, because, you know, it doesn't have to be, it can be as extensive as you want. But what I think where it helps is whatever it is, let's say, you know, you're writing a meal, write down what you ate, but also write down how you felt before and after you ate it. And it doesn't have to be extensive. It can be, you know, I got in an argument with my kid and it just ate and, you know, a jumbo bag of Twizzlers like that. and you might just jot it down, but at the end of a week, when you kind of flip through those pages and see, you start to make connections. Like, oh, actually, I don't even know if I'm really physically craving that thing or if I'm like, I'm stress chewing, you know, right. And I say Twizzlers because like, that's my thing. Like I want, if I'm stressed, I want to gnaw, 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 and chew on something nice and bouncy and rubbery, and Twizzlers fits the bill. But, you know, whatever it is, if it's cake, if it's chips, if it's alcohol, whatever it is, it's serving you in some way and you may not be aware. And when you start to write things down and you can just take a look back, oh, I took a 10-minute walk and I wrote down that I felt revived. I felt not so sad. You know, it's a great tool when you're starting, you know, when you're trying to form a new habit.
Yeah. And I think there's something even just about the act of writing it down that like cements it emotionally. Even if I never went back and looked, I have journals that I never go back and look at, but something about having put pen to paper and kinesthetically like put those feelings into words made them lock into place a little bit differently than they otherwise would.
That's so well said. And I will say, I don't even want to look back at old journals. Like
it's a little cringy.
It's so cringy. Oh my God. I don't even want to know what I was thinking sometimes about things. But you're right. Like it's informing you somehow, you know, it's cementing things for you. And that's critical.
Well, Rachel, we have to wrap up, which makes me sad because this is so fun.
Me too. I'm having so much fun.
I know, but I do have one other question for you. And this is a big one. So I apologize, but I know that you work as a certified nutritional consultant and in your work, you know, on Instagram and with the Hello Perry app and all of those things. You work with a lot of midlife women. And I just wonder if at the end of the day, if you had to boil it down to your number one priority, what would that be?
Mm. Oh, that's a good question. Honestly, Megan, I really just want women to believe in themselves and feel healed of their own trash. And that's probably, you know, it's probably an oversimplification. It's probably all projection. But I really just hope to be a voice in the room that can kindly inform women and equip them without any judgment, without any condemnation. But ultimately, I hope for midlife women to step into their vibrancy and really have a grip and a willingness and a passion about the possibility, all that remains ahead of them. And really deeper than that, feel worthy and excited enough to go for it, whatever it may be in their lives. If it's about food, if it's about movement, if it's about a relationship, whatever it is, I want women to feel like they can and should and deserve to go after it. And truly, I mean, just back to food, because that is the lane that I drive in. I really do want women to be healthy. You know, I'm not the only woman out there who struggled with her body and food and disordered eating and self-punishment and all that. And I'm just so done with that. Mm-hmm. I am so done with it. And I'm so aware that there is a freedom that comes in stepping through the process of working out all of this stuff. And I also feel strongly that food is medicinal, you know, to the body and the mind, importantly. And it's my jump off point when looking to address certain things that ail me. And it's a place of comfort, and it's how I express love and share love and all that. But, you know, there is a vibrancy to this season of life. And I want women to just tap into that. I think we step into this place that's like kind of magical in many ways, you know? But like, life is for real and things get in the way of that. But this is a second season for us. It really is. And so I want us to always be encouraged to sort of find and hang on to what's gonna bring us real joy, real health, you know, and real compassion.
Yeah. And as you're talking, I was just thinking about the vibrancy that's in food. I mean, the Twizzlers that you mentioned earlier, they serve a purpose, but they're flat. You know what I mean? There's like nothing there.
Yes.
It's just like, I just chewed on a bunch of Twizzlers.
I love that.
Cool.
Yes.
But there is something to there's something to a meal that you made or even that someone made for you or whatever that's live. And there's a different vibrancy to that. It just is.
That is so beautifully said. And I couldn't agree with you more. It's on my mind lately because I've been sort of dipping my toe into sharing these lunches that I make for myself. And that really is like, I guess that's what I'm thinking about is it, you know, that there is vibrancy in this meal and it'll take you a few minutes and you can enjoy it and, you know, see how it resonates for you.
Yeah.
So thank you for saying that. That's great.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Rachel. This has been really fun. Always love having you on. Do you have anything fun coming up that you want to share with my audience or a place to direct them? I know you've got a lot going on.
Yeah. So actually, I hate when people sort of play coy, but I have a few things coming
that
up.
I can't talk about,
but I will. I'm very hopeful and excited about them and looking forward to, you know, making a little bit of a pivot myself. And I'm still on with Perry. We're having a little bit of a lull now between summer and the fact that Perry's founder and her second in command have both had new babies.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So, which is so funny to me that I'm so far away from that. You
right.
Know?
And, I know. It's kind of funny.
They're,
I'm like,
they're
oh,
really
yeah,
in the
I guess
thick
that's
of
still
it.
A thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
People still do that,
exactly.
I guess.
People still do that. What are they, crazy? But yeah, so I you know, I'm just kind of enjoying the summer and you can still find me out and about on Perry and on my Instagram feed.
Yeah. Well, and I will link all that up in the show notes, but I love following you on Insta. It's always like, you've got great content. It's fun to follow. So, we will link that up and thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's just been a pleasure.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of the Mother of Reinvention Show. As always, you can find everything we talked about in today's episode at motherofreinventionshow.com, including links to Rachel's Instagram account and those cute Clarita wedges from our sponsor, Vionic. And as always, if you have suggestions or comments about the show, I'd love to hear from you. You can email hello@motherofreinventionshow.com or find me at Mother of Reinvention Show and at Megan Francis, MEAGAN Francis, on Instagram. Okay, I'll be back next week with a new episode. Talk to you then.